Welcome, everyone, to episode 416 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, it is the return of Xander Demos. He was on the show way back when we were still Mars Attacks podcast. Back on the show a dozen years ago. And he's back to promote his new band, XDB.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
A shout out to my patrons real quickly here. Sean Richmond, Chris Sinzak, Tony Espin, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Johan Edstrom, Metal Dan, Chris Vaglio, Gabriel Ruiz, Brad Dahl, Mike Jones, Jeremy Weltman, Steve Hoker, and Steven Saylor. Thank you guys all for your unmitigated support. I love all you guys. And I want to thank anyone who is listening to this episode. Do me a part of Patreon for as little as $2 a month. Get daily videos that we all discuss. Get my Victor M. Ruiz podcast. Various questions, polls, stuff like that. I like to stay active on there. And for those that don't know, Kiss is one of my all-time favorite bands. You always hear them talk about how they wanted to be the band that they never got to see on stage. With my Patreon, I kind of take it on the same way, in the sense that I want to provide you guys with the Patreon group that no one else does. There's a lot of Patreon groups out there that are bigger, make a hell of a lot more money than I do, and they give you a tenth of the content. Let's be honest. You know, anyway, I don't want to bash anyone just for my benefit, but I'm open to, suggestions, discussions. And we've got, for example, a Megadeth album countdown taking place tonight. And we have a bunch of patrons that will be joining me to discuss this countdown. And it's interesting, all 17 Megadeth albums have made it. Actually, it's 16 plus an EP have made the list. Every album has been voted for at least once. And it's going to be a cool discussion. That's what I like to do here. I like to discuss music and bring you interviews whenever I can. In this case, this interview with Xander. But anyway, if you want to keep up with all things Signals from Mars, just go to signalsfrommars.com. You'll find links to the Patreon there, or you can just go to patreon.com/signalsfrommars. In any event, from signalsfrommars.com, you can pick up merch. You can check out all the social media platforms where you can keep up with the show. You can find audio versions of the show or the video version of each episode. So if you start to listen to this and you enjoy the episode, go to YouTube and check out the video version, for example. We're also up on Rumble and Twitch and a bunch of other platforms. Go to, once again, signalsfrommars.com to find out where you can keep up with the show. This discussion with Xander, I thought was pretty cool. You go into interviews and you don't know what to expect, especially when you haven't spoken to someone in such a long time. You don't know what they want to talk about. You don't know how to, take the interview in the sense that I try to not ask the same old questions. Sometimes it's inevitable, but, as you're feeling somebody out during the interview process and you can throw in some additional things that maybe come up during the interview, it sweetens things up, makes things a lot cooler, I think. And that's what I think what ended up happening with this interview with Xander. So if you enjoy it, check out his music. And Yeah, thanks for listening, and let's get on with the episode. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today for this episode is Mr. Xander Demos. Xander, how are you, sir? Oh, now I can.
I'm unmuted.
Okay, cool. So I had Xander on the show a little while ago, back in 2013, actually. So practically yesterday. At that time, you were working with James Rivera. You were working as a solo artist.
Yep.
Now you're back with XDB.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the band came together?
Yeah, absolutely. So XDB, it's not so much too much of a mystery on the. It stood for the Xander Demos Band, for a while. But we're in a place right now where I'm working with people that are really good. They're not like hired guns. These are all bandmates, which is, it makes a big difference. And so we said, hey, listen, we already put the marketing in for, XDB being, I'm the XD in XDB, right? I'm Xander Demos in that. But let's just go by XDB moving forward. That way, if people ask, they say, okay, this is the origin of it. It was a solo project. It's almost like, I don't want to compare myself to Yngwie. I mean, I'm not in the same class. He's amazing. And, I'm just a guitar player, in my opinion, and he's, but Yngwie Malmsteen's Rising Force, Rising Force was sort of like the band, but it had rotating members in and out, whoever was, some people were there for a long time. Some people were not. This, we look at this as like a band. This is a band effort. So that's pretty much the origin.
Was that something that you were looking for after working as a solo artist a while back? Did you want to have other people that were going to be giving you input and maybe, help with what you were trying to do as a guitarist to kind of push you further as an artist?
Yeah, I guess subconsciously I pretty much was. I mean, I think it's fair to say that because. Honestly, I could only do so much as a solo artist. Honestly, there's a lot of people like this album that we have coming out called Gods of Aliens. This was when I was going to do a second follow up to Guitarcadia so long ago. I was going to have probably at least 5 or 6 instrumentals on there again. Now I have no interest in even doing that.
Okay.
I do, but I don't like, if I was going to do like a solo album that was going to be instrumental stuff, I would just kind of piecemeal them and probably just release them as individuals. Mm-hmm. Guitarcadia was sort of like my effort because there were songs on there that I written so long ago. There were some songs that I contributed to a couple bands I was in. I said, I really want to play this. I want to do these tunes. So it was sort of like stuffing all that stuff into one record, And then finally, when it all came down to it, it was like, let's just go ahead and, on this album, let's make this a true vocal album because we got 5 people that can sing and 3 of us are lead singers, so it makes a big difference.
Okay. So that's something that we'll expect to see is 3 different singers on what you guys are going to release.
Yes. Yeah. I might sing on one. We have a bass player. Her name is Emily Stroop and she is just ripping bass player, 20 years old and an amazing voice. And our keyboard player, Brendan Callahan, he is 23 and he's just a phenomenal keyboard player. A lot of the, and then there's like that myself and 2 other guys that are closer to my age. So there's this big generation in between us. Right. Mm-hmm. But what's cool about that is that, those 2, Brendan and Emily, they have like this, they have the benefit of like growing up in the digital age and the YouTube age and all that stuff. So if they had to learn something, it was just. It was free, it was easy to learn. Myself and Rob Kane, which is our lead vocalist, another guitar player, and then Guy Cole, our drummer, we paid our dues the hard way. We were like, this isn't how this song goes. What's going on here? So we did things the old fashioned way. It's a really good synergy or symbiont, if you want to call it that. But yeah, as far as vocals go, we kind of spread it out. Rob and Emily are the primaries, though. They're the primary singers.
Okay. And to date, you guys have released a single called When the Love Is Gone.
Mm-hmm.
What stands out to me about the track is that it's melodic, but at the same time, it's still helping showcase the musicianship of the band. Reading the bio that was sent to me, it was interesting to see the kind of two opposite spectrums being mentioned. One was the band TNT and the other one was Savatage.
Yeah, that's right.
So, again, is that conscious that you guys were looking to do something like that? Or with the five of you, this is just kind of what came together when each one started throwing their spices into the recipe?
It's a great question. I mean, it started primarily as one of Rob's songs, really. And then he threw it out to us and we all started doing our thing with it, you know, and it's so we all contributed. And it was pretty cool, like how it came together. And yeah, there are elements. I mean, I think all of us, you know, have the appreciation for bands like TNT and Savatage and stuff like that. I mean, I grew up around Savatage in Clearwater, Florida, throughout the 80s. And, you know, knew them pretty well. And of course they, you know, knowing them as a much younger player, they shaped my, musical upbringing. So they're always going to be like an influence. It's one of those things where, you know, a lot of guitar players my age, they say that they were influenced by, you know, Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads and even Yngwie and, you know, guys like that, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s. And for me, it was, I mean, there's no doubt it was Eddie Van Halen and Chris Oliva were two of my biggest influences. I'd say probably one more bigger than them was actually Brad Gillis, you know, because that's what really made me want to switch from drums back in 1982, because my parents told me I suck terribly at playing drums. So let's think of a different instrument for you. I was 13, you know, and so we did guitar and I saw Brad Gillis, you know, on the Speak of the Devil tour. And all the videos, and I'm just like, man, this guy's tone and this guy's playing is just awesome. And I didn't even know who Randy Rhoads was at the time. I had no clue that he replaced him because he had passed away, you know. I had no idea. I just liked the tone. And then a Night Ranger video comes on, I'm like, wait a second, is that the same guy, you know? And it was freaking me out. But then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, now this is making sense. When there was no internet to say, hey Google, who's this guy, you know? And But anyway, yeah. So my early influence there, like, yeah, Savatage had a big part of that. And it was, so even in my songwriting, even on some things on Guitarcadia, there was elements of that in there, even though there's some instrumentals, but as I was writing more vocal tunes in the past, like 10 years, I noticed that unavoidable influence.
Yeah. That's interesting that you bring up the whole Brad Gillis thing for those that are younger than us.
Yeah.
Before the internet, if you were lucky to catch a blurb in a magazine, you know, 6 months after something happened, you were able to find out that Brad Gillis had gone back to Night Ranger and Randy Rhoads and this and that. I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, I think I found out who Randy Rhoads was when Ozzy released the tribute album. You know, and they started talking about that he had died and this and that. And I'd heard Crazy Train a million times on the radio.
Right. Right. And don't get me wrong. I love that tone.
Yeah.
You know, it was just that, like, I, even though I'd heard the song, it was seeing it performed live and like how thick that sound was, you know, like on those videos. And I mean, that's all it took. I mean, those are the videos that I would see, like on repeat, would be things from Speak of the Devil. And then ultimately things from Van Halen. You're talking about pre-1984, right? Yeah, so they were showing like a lot of the Van Halen concerts where they were doing, you know, Dance the Night Away, Unchained, and So This Is Love and all that stuff. And you're seeing like this wall of amplifiers and this gigantic drum set. And it's just like, wait a second. Now this, you know, and the spectacle of it was both of those presented the same, you know what I mean? You had your drummer way up here on the riser, you had your bass player and your guitar player on the same side of the stage, singer in the middle. I'm like, okay, this is the formula. I get it now, you know? You know, but I always had the melodic, you know, part of that too, because, you know, one of my favorite players growing up was Tom Schultz as well, you know, and just Boston in general. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I mean, I just, you know, how do you get that power soaked sound out of the Marshall, you know, without modelers, you know what I mean? Like if you try to do it the old fashioned way, it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of muscle. And at my age, in my mid 50s, I don't want to lift that stuff up to go play a gig.
Right.
I admit it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, and that's without getting into old bass amps or trudging anything anywhere. So,
yeah, right.
You already mentioned that you guys are working on more material for an album. When The Love Is Gone came out in April, are you spacing the songs out before the album comes out? Or
we are. Yeah, we actually, over the past couple of weeks, though, surprisingly, we got asked to do like a bunch of shows. And I mean, and some of them were like, you know, not gigantic spectacle or anything like that. Some opening shows and like even an acoustic show and stuff. And we have been spending time like rehearsing, like, well, God, if we got to play for 2 hours, you know, what are we going to play? We never really scaled down our set. So, you know, we wouldn't, you know, we ended up playing like all covers just to make it easy. We have been asked to, you know, to do it again and stuff like that. So we said, yeah, okay, you know, we'll go ahead and do it. And, but it also means that each week that passes by, we don't get something else done on a record. And like Rob, my singer, you know, we live right near each other and where we live in Pittsburgh. And, so it's very easy for him and I to get together and do things. And it's just been, sometimes it's just been chaos and we just can't get together, as much as we want. So ultimately what we end up doing is, I might like, he'll send me a track. I'll pull it into Studio One or whatever. I'll record it or zero track it, send it back if he needs a solo or something like that. Right. So we are doing that and we're making progress. We just have to actually finish about four other songs and we can release the album, but we do want to release two more songs over, like as originals, or I mean, two more songs as, you know, cuts, but instead of releasing one, we want to do like a nice 1-2 punch and, maybe release them maybe a couple weeks apart. That way there's a lot for people to talk about. And then we'll go ahead and release the album because the album's got like a lot of great stuff on it.
Okay. Is there an ETA as to when you guys think the album will be coming out or still?
I'm saying late summer. The original thing was to try to get it in for summer, like sometime in the summer. So if we get it in late summer, I think we're good because we're going to try and do another big show in Pittsburgh with Red Beach from Whitesnake and Winger, and then bringing some people in from Guy and Rob's other project called Love and Chains. If I'm not mistaken, I can't remember if that was the one that's on Frontiers, the Frontiers label that's overseas and stuff like that. And we're going to be shopping ours around too. We have some interest in a local being Ohio, a label out there. But we're just trying to look for some different terms on it. And, I think the material will speak for itself because it's, like I said, it's very melodic. It's very, some people would call it poppy, but it's hard to describe it that way. You know, it still has a very heavy edge to it. The solos are melodic, but I mean, I throw the elements of like shred guitar in there and all that kind of stuff. I hate saying that term anymore, but it's still a thing, I guess.
Right. Okay. When we spoke way back when at that time, you were coming out with a signature model on from Esoteric. How has your gear changed since then?
Pretty dramatically. So there's been some big developments with that. Esoteric, I don't think we ever came to terms on anything.
Okay.
So David Thomas McNaught makes my signature model. So it's called the XD, you know, imagine that. It comes in, you know, whatever flavor you want, 6-string, 7-string. If somebody just says, hey, I just want like one of his guitars, the way he plays it, it would be 27 frets, bare knuckle pickups, the hip shot, you know, tremolo system on it. Not a big fan of Floyd Roses, and I haven't been for years just because my fat hands dig into them, you know, so I like a low profile trem. It turned out to be like a really cool guitar. And amazingly enough, he sold well over 20, I think almost 30 of them so far.
Okay.
And then recently I have just joined up with Headless USA because I've been a huge, huge Steinberger player for, 30 plus years. And I don't play the headless guitars. That's the irony in the whole thing. I played the only one they ever made with a headstock when they were really trying to get into the what they call the super strat back in the late 80s and early 90s. So if you saw like Brett Garson from Nelson and a few other players, like even Buckethead, they play like this guitar from Steinberger called the GS. And that's I have two of those and I play them like almost every show. So I usually take my signature guitar. I have a 7-string and a 6-string. And then I usually take, one of the two Steinbergers I have. And then the other one I usually take is either like over here hanging on my wall is either a Sur or a Anderson, like a Super Strat, so I can get those tones. So I always bring three guitars to every gig. It's kind of weird like that. It's like an OCD thing. And it's funny. But anyway, yeah, so I just I've just joined forces with Headless USA, who owns the Steinberger. Basically, they don't own the Steinberger brand because that's Gibson. Mm-hmm. They own the Steinberger intellectual property or IP, if you want to call it that. So if they go to re-release the GS, I'll be one of the players for it, which is really cool.
Okay. And as far as taking those three guitars out, do you play all three?
Always. Yeah. Okay. You know, if we do a half hour show, I'm more inclined to basically stick with one. Tomorrow night we're playing like a full hour set, like we're headlining at a place called Jurgles here in Pittsburgh, and I will be playing at least two different ones because I want to play my 7-string on two songs, and then I'll be playing one of the other 6-strings on the other. So if I start out with a 6 and I switch to the 7, I'll play the other 6 for the rest of the night. It's one of those things where whatever fits. It also depends on what you're gelling with at that time too. Like. Mm-hmm. I've been playing my Steinbergers a lot, so I'll probably start the night with them, or I'll play my signature guitar, and because Dave McNaught, he's so good at what he does, he's the only one of two luthiers I've worked with that when I said I didn't send him a Steinberger to base the neck on. I just know that anytime I buy a guitar, I always compare it to how those GS guitars play. So because I play differently on those necks. It's weird. They're not wood. They're made out of graphite. Right. So if I can really play the way I want to play on those instruments, or on another instrument, then I say, yeah, this guitar is in that same class, as that graphite. Like I have a Brian Moore MC1. It has a Sustainiac I put in it and stuff like that. It's so cool. It's got that graphite, fingerboard, and it has that feel to it, So yeah. I like a lot of those, those kind of strange shaped guitars like that. At the same time, I'm a traditionalist where I like a nice double cutaway. So I'm really weird. I'm glad my wife never has had to buy a guitar for me. She'd be like, yeah, I'm not doing this.
You mentioned the bare knuckle pickups before.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think I've had one or two other people mention them over the years to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are they active pickups? Are they passive?
They're passive. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The ones I use are passive. I actually use the, it's called a Holy Diver. It's in a bridge. And then the neck pickup is called an Emerald.
Okay.
And I actually have that in my McNaught signature. In my 7-strings, I use EMGs. And in the Steinbergers, I actually have EMGs in there. I do have one guitar that a local luthier built for me. His name is Mike Caldwell. And I needed a guitar that was going to be in standard tuning all the time. Everything we do is in E-flat, like everything. Mm-hmm. And we even do some things that are like in straight D, which is like if you see the wall of Ghost stuff, I'm a big Ghost fan over here. And they do everything in straight D and stuff. And it's like, I play through a quad cortex and I actually have a setting on their transposer that will, transpose up. And the processor on that thing is incredible. So, there's no issue with like, latency and stuff like that, even playing really fast. And I like that, but at the same time, I do like the organic feel of having a different tune guitar when necessary. So I have Mike build me one that was a little bit shorter scale. And we based it on sort of like the Ernie Ball Luke. And 24 fret though, instead of the 22, because I'm just weird like that. Another OCD thing. And then, and then, on that guitar, he did the neck actually similar to the Steinberger too. So, I mean, it's all, you know, I mean, it just has that feel to it. And we used Duncan pickups on that one. We actually went with like traditional hot rails and a Duncan distortion, and man, is the thing just screaming. It's just beautiful, because if I do a filming gig for somebody and I can't convince them to tune down, at least I'll grab that guitar and say, okay, I've got this. You know, I filled in for a friend of mine's band who has a Heart tribute band. And, you know, I already knew how they were, you know, I'm like, yep, they're going to be playing everything standard. So I'm going to grab that guitar and that's it. But, yeah, anyway, that's how I roll on that. I don't even remember what your first question was.
I was asking about the, bare knuckle pickups, but that makes sense. I was bringing that up more than anything, because I've got a few different guitars and they've all got different pickups, from DiMarzio's to EMG's to, trying to think, I've got blackouts in something as well. And it's always an interesting thing to bring up and talk to people about, because I don't think a lot of even players, I don't think realize the difference that having different types of pickups can offer you with sounds and different things that,
Oh yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And I do think it does matter for the instrument. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of great 7-string passive pickups out there, but for some reason, like in the first McNaught signature I ever got, which was the 7-string, I've had the EMG 707 and then the 707 TW in there, which a lot of times people just say that is like a basic pickup. And you know what? It is, but it's always clean. It always distorts right and all that kind of stuff. So I've never had any weird inconsistency problems with it. And ultimately it looks really cool. I hate to say it. I mean, it just looks nice on a guitar that's got 27 frets, you know, I mean, that's right. What else can you say, you know? And I think if you have multiple guitars, it does help to actually experiment a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Duncan's, DiMarzio's, bare knuckles, Jim Wagner. I think I have a guitar that has Wagner pickups in there. I even had some, the Fishman, guitar player named Greg Koch, Telecaster player. He's frighteningly amazing. And, I actually have a set of his that has a little button on there that actually changes to the voicing, for like tele pickups and stuff like that. So it's really have that flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When we first started the interview, I brought up the name James Rivera. You had played with other people in the past as well. Do you still get people like that reaching out to you, wanting to work on different things, or maybe just do solos for, you know, maybe for a song or two here?
Yeah. Here and there. Honestly, it doesn't happen as much as it did in the past. I mean, I wouldn't mind, you know, someone coming, hey, you know, throw a solo down and stuff. And maybe there's just a bigger pool of people to choose from. I mean, which I can respect that. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think that I'm so wrapped up in what we're doing, so I don't know if I'd actually have that kind of time. I did. Rob Kane from XDB. He's actually brought up some things for me with a few people. And there was somebody who had like an alternative metal song that, you know, kind of sounded almost like Fear Factory, mm-hmm. In a way. And then they, you know, they said, you know, hey, can you have your guy throw a solo down? And I gave him three. And Rob, he's such a mastermind in the studio that he actually took elements of all three solos and, you know, put them together, I guess, like almost on the four, you know, of the beats and stuff. He's like, I like the way you started this one, but this one ended better and all that and stuff. So I guess it's still going on. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. You mentioned that you have a show coming up with XDB. How many shows do you have planned out in the near future?
As of right now, we are, okay. So it's a great question. Let me preface the answer on that. So XDB, as the way you're interviewing me right now, it's XDB, the original project, you know, like our original music, and that's what we want to play, you know. But we have two other elements of the same five people. We have one called Vox Acoustic, and that stands for Voices of XDB Acoustic.
Okay.
Where we strip it all down. We play, you know, with a Cajon kit. And I mean, I can't play acoustic guitar because I'm just a sissy and I need my electric guitars that have piezos. And I play the electric acoustic sound that way. And we just, all five of us sing. So all five of us actually, you know, sing, you know, some of those tunes, you know, with mostly covers, of course. And then we have what we call XTB Under the Covers. And Under the Covers is if somebody says, hey, we need a cover band for this thing. Sometimes it's a private party. Sometimes it's, you know, at a club where they say, hey, didn't you used to be in this band? And didn't you used to be in this band? I mean, like my drummer was in a couple of Motley Crue tribute bands and stuff like that. And they did really, you know, they played huge shows and stuff. And because tribute bands are still big. Mm-hmm. For us, it's basically like saying, okay, look, we're going to do three sets for you. We're going to do 10 songs per set. You know, you're going to hear your standards. You'll hear like an REO Speedwagon. You'll hear a Boston. You'll hear a Journey or song or two, maybe something more modern, like Lit or something like that. Right. Maybe a Poison tune just for the hell of it. No backing tracks. I mean, since we have such strong vocals and background vocals, it's, you know, we do that very well. And then of course you're going to have to deal with a one or two of our originals. So that actually gives us a way to hoe ourselves out. we definitely have three flavors. Tomorrow night is basically just it's original. We're playing a couple cover tunes, but it's our album is called Gods of Aliens, and that we're doing basically six tracks off of that plus two songs from Guitar Arcadia and then three cover tunes, which we've selected, you know, just for like a night like tomorrow night, and we have two openers and stuff. So it's going to be fun.
Okay.
Moving on down the road, though, like then we have some vacation time. Everyone's got some time coming up. I think we get back to work probably mid-July. We have like three shows in July and another three in August. And I think that we're trying to put something together for the fall.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite covers to play?
Ooh, man. Going to go down that rabbit hole. I love playing Stone in Love from Journey because I love doing the solos. They're a lot of fun. Cover tunes. Wow. We actually have taken some liberties and done some other crazy cover tunes. Like we've done Rising Force from Yngwie. Mm-hmm. We've done Pull Me Under from Dream Theater, which is a blast to play.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we've like Square Hammer from Ghost is a fun tune to play because a lot of people they dismiss them because they're all, you know, they look all goofy and stuff like that, and that's fine if you think that. But there's no doubt that Square Hammer is a banger of a tune. You know what I mean? It's just really, it kind of fits with all those classics. You know, so
right,
that one's fun to play. I probably would. Yeah, I mean, I like the challenges. You know, I mean, I like some of the ones that, you know, have challenges to them. So we'll do Carry On Wayward Son. You know, we got the vocals nailed down. You know, and I mean, we do More Than a Feeling. Between Rob and Emily and their range, oh my God! I mean, they get that like effortless, and it's. Wow. I mean, I'm looking at them saying, why aren't we doing a Boston tribute band? Would we clean the house with that? You know, and you know, my only thing is I won't play a Gold Top Les Paul. No, sorry, Tom.
Is there any cover tune that you've brought to the rest of the band that has gotten vetoed?
Not really. That was probably more of a thing back in the day when I was just in cover bands. We had a cover band called Into the Arena, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, we, you know, it was, you know, arena rock stuff, you know, and the ones that probably they pushed back on were the ones that were our biggest successes live.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example. Bad Romance by Lady Gaga.
Okay.
I play, they're like, dude, you're crazy. We're not playing a Lady Gaga song. I said, hear me out. All right. And we just started playing it. I actually sang it. And I got a kind of like a high raspy voice when I sing. So I was able to kind of nail like some of her, you know, inflections and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we did it. And of course, you know, I did it with, you know, like heavy guitar and stuff like that. And then we all looked at each other like, oh, this is going to kill. And we played it. We ended up playing it like a week or two later. And it was one of our best tunes live. And we kept it on rotation. So there were other songs that, you know, that kind of got shot down. I do know that our old bass player, he brought Footloose to us, and we all vetoed that one. It's like, dude, I'm not playing Footloose. I'm not playing that song.
Right.
You know, because I told him I was going to break into an 80s dance in the middle of it. And I said, you don't want to see me doing that dance. And he started cracking up. And then I gave it the college try. We all played it. And our drummer, he stopped halfway through and he pulled his hat down and he's like, no. It's just like stuff like that. So, I mean, I try to, you know, bring songs, you know, that'll work. I think in our acoustic set we're trying to do, I think I did, I pulled up Ed Sheeran, Thinking About You, or, well, no, Thinking Out Loud.
Okay.
And, easy song to sing, you know, like I, you know, sang through it, but we kind of like left it off of our list because I know they weren't crazy about it. I mean, I do play with like some people that are more rockers and stuff like that, mm-hmm. Yeah, but we ended up playing like Pink Houses from John Cougar, you know, and
right.
I mean, I was okay with that. It's kind of boring, but I mean, that's okay. I mean, people that were there, they liked it and that's all that matters, you know? So I'm very flexible like that.
Yeah. Well, it seems like with all the different songs that you're throwing out there, from Ed Sheeran to Lady Gaga and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And Dream Theater. I mean, you're pretty open to pretty much doing anything.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's kind of funny. I mean, well, you know, there's very little that I like, we won't kind of get into just in case there's very little that we won't get into because we do like, between the five of us and the difference in ages and difference in experiences and stuff like that, we have all five unique tastes.
Right.
You know, it's really cool though. Like my singer and I, and we're both huge TNT fans. So there's, mm-hmm. you know, there's things in there that we like, you know, there's elements you'll hear even in the new songs that we have coming out that actually have elements of TNT in there. But mostly I would say the TNT probably from Intuition is probably our favorite.
Okay.
You know, so if you're familiar with that album, like our songs have more of that vibe than maybe like the, you know, Knights of the New Thunder, which is like the early stuff. As far as Sabotage, you know, kind of things go, I mean, more later leaning almost towards the TSO stuff,
okay.
You know, is kind of like, you know, where I've approached that. They've been timeless though for so long. They're one of those bands that are just completely timeless in my eyes.
So would you be more, willing to cover Handful of Rain as opposed to Gutter Ballet?
I'd have to go Gutter Ballet.
Okay.
I love Handful of Rain, don't get me wrong, but I would want to be able to play that nasty drop D riff, you know. God, I love it. I was playing it the other night, just messing around with it, and I hadn't played it in a long time, and I think I was sitting in my living room and I had that standard tune guitar I was telling you about, and I drop D'd it and I was playing along with some stuff and I said, hey, I'm gonna grab, you know, I'm gonna go to Sabotage. So I go on YouTube on my TV and I start playing along with the video. So I'm playing like, you know, Jesus Saves and Gutter Ballet and Believe, mm-hmm. and, you know, like a bunch of classic Power of the Night. I mean, like, you know, that song's just way too much fun. And some of those are actually in Half Step Down. So I usually have both of those guitars like sitting next to me. So if I've got to change that, nobody can ever agree on tunings.
Right.
That's the only thing I was really just kind of like a pain in the butt about, you know, like whenever anybody's ever joined our band, I've always said we are in E flat. And I had one bass player, his name was Ben, amazing bass player, but all he did was he tuned his lowest, he had played a five string, he tuned his lowest string down a half step. And I said, what about like if you have to like ride the E? He's like, no, I'll just hold it down. I'm thinking to myself, that doesn't sound the same. It doesn't look the same, you know, but I'm not worried about that. But he was so good at it. He was just like, you know, if I was playing an open E, he knew that, you know, he would be like on the F the F on his, you know, like he'd be on the first fret. And I'm like, okay, wow, that's crazy. He has no problem with that.
Right.
You know, he had no problem. He never missed a single note live. I'm like, wow, how do you do it? Right. And he filled in for us a couple of years ago when we did a solo show. Opening for a friend of mine who came in from California. We did a weekend with him. And it was funny because he said at the time, he's like, yeah, he's like, I'm getting a little bit older. He's like, I'll tune down a half step, you know, because he likes his strings really tight. I mean, he's got these giant, you know, scary hands that, mm-hmm. he just, you know, it looked like he was strangling his bass. And it was really cool. I couldn't pull that off. You know, I like my light string tension and all that stuff. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Looking forward to the new album. Are you guys looking to just release that digitally? Are you looking to release it in a physical format, CD or vinyl?
Yeah, but like all three, we want to go digital, we want to go CD, and we want to go vinyl. I know vinyl's made this comeback, and we've been negotiating some deals to get some vinyl pressing. So they're going to be, of course, limited. It also depends on, whatever deal we end up striking up with, somebody says, hey, look, we'll give you distribution. You guys can do whatever you want with the physical. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of those rules have changed and sometimes I don't understand them, but Rob, our singer, he's got much better handle on that stuff. So I leave it to him. I just stroke the check. That's all.
What would you like to see with the vinyl? Anything specific you're looking at?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah.
I would be kind of cool to do Scott, I have a couple guitars. Let's see. I've got my Sur, I have my Anderson, I have a Conklin, I have my signature guitar sitting right there, my 7-string. And they all have and everybody in my band will completely agree with me on this. I have a green and blue fetish, It's got to be like some form of green and blue or teal or something like that in between. And it'd be really cool to have kind of like a burst, like a starburst on the vinyl itself. Like that would be like blue and green, And I'm sure everybody if they go to watch this video, or they go to watch this interview later on, they're like, of course you had to say that, didn't you? It would be cool to see that. I mean, just, it'd also be cool. What it was like growing up and, when you get that vinyl, you're like looking at every detail, especially like on an Iron Maiden album. Remember that? You're looking at like all the small, the details that the artist, put on there and stuff like that. It was always cool to look at. It just, CD was almost, I'm like, I got my readers on here, but I'm like, oh my God, I can't see that at all. Right. So I'd like to see some cool artwork possibly on that, to make people like want to buy it just to say, hey, I've got this. And hey, would you guys sign it and all that kind of stuff, So it'd be pretty cool.
Do you have something in mind for the graphic design of the album cover? Have you guys gotten that far?
We have an idea. We have an idea for the cover, or maybe a lead in from the cover to the back of the vinyl itself, or the cover of the record itself. Mm-hmm. Because we have a promo pick that we really like, we wanted to also do since it's called Gods of Aliens, we wanted to basically have the same picture, but on the back, have it kind of like, cartoonified or AI generated, not AI generated. I'd like to actually see an artist do it, but where each of us has like a different alien head kind of thing, but in the same exact pose that we're in kind of, So it just depends. We're kicking some ideas around. I think right now, once we get the music done, we're going to be like, okay, cool. Now let's design an album cover. Yeah. So I might put that out there for somebody to do. I'd be happy to, pay them for their time and stuff like that. But I would definitely want it to be, unique,
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Where should people go to keep up with XDB?
So right now the best place is xdbmusic.com. Old school website, we do update it as much as we can. You follow us on Instagram and Facebook. So under Facebook, it's just facebook.com/XanderDemus Music. And then at Xander Demus on Instagram. We are setting up a new XDB profile on Instagram. We ran into an issue with that before. We got locked out for some reason. I don't know what that is, but anyway, we're still kind of old school on the website thing. We would like to be able to embed videos and do that stuff, link to YouTube and everything. On YouTube, it's the same thing. It's, Xander Demus. We kept all that stuff alive because that's where it was, when we talked, 2013, I was 12 years ago. So, a lot of that stuff is still the same. We want to get new subscribers, new fans and stuff like that. This is going to have a better outreach, I think. These next two songs that are coming out, I think are going to be, I would say a little bit more universal. Okay. And they should be pretty easy for people to, if they like this type of music. I think if somebody really had to put, kind of pigeonhole it, say, look, you can say you're unique all day long, but where are you really drawing it from? Are you familiar with a lot of Swedish bands out there?
With the what? I'm sorry.
Swedish bands.
Yeah.
Okay. Heat and Eclipse. Have you heard of those guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. we are kind of like, this new album is sort of like Eclipse.
Okay.
Sabotage. Maybe a little bit of Racer X, tiny bit, you know, and maybe an element or two of Whitesnake.
Okay.
But I'd say like those, you know, those first two, and then, yeah. And then, you know, TNT. So they're definitely in the melodic sense of it, you know, the high energy guitar, the big vocals, you know, like Eclipse and Heat have gigantic vocals, you know, in their songs.
Right.
Stuff like that. So we have those elements in there. Yet the simplicity of like bands like Ghost, you know, there's nothing from Ghost that's really complex, but we don't have like the early album doom metal sound. We kind of like more from Brickell onward, you know, like with Rats and, you know, Dance Macabre, like those real melodic, you know, poppier tunes and stuff. Right. Like that.
Right. Gotcha.
A little bit of, you know, a pretty big stew of everything, you know, but so it's old and new. It's not just, you know, oh, we're, you know, we sound like, you know, Whitesnake on steroids, or we sound like, you know, this band from the 80s. No, we don't sound like them at all. We have a very much of a modern edge. I've embraced, you know, like a lot of those modern bands and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even I think a lot of people talk about Heat and Eclipse, and they just talk about, oh, well, they sound like bands from this era. And if you actually listen to them, sure, they've got elements. Tuning differently. They're playing stuff a little different as well. And, you know, I've got followers who are big into both of those bands, and
yeah,
I post videos by them all the time. So
yeah, they're great bands. And I mean, my wife and I have seen them on a bunch of the Monsters of Rock cruises and stuff like that. And I mean, they're just so much fun to watch, because it's just, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, diss on bands. Like, for example, Kix, we saw them a couple of years ago. They're a great band. I mean, they're, you know, classic hard rock from the 80s. And I mean, they still kept it going. I mean, I give them credit for as long, but they finally said, okay, guys, we've had enough. We're done.
Right.
Direct end scene. You know what I mean? And it was just one of those things where it's like, hey, look, age has caught up with them. Mm-hmm. And you know, the guys in like in Heat and Eclipse are much younger. They bring like, you know, another level or another element. And I love it. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, that no one's trying to beat the dead horse. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, if Kix wants to come back, hey, you know, and I'm just using them as an example. I've seen them live, what, 4 or 5 times, I think a couple times on those cruises. Mm-hmm. They bring the energy. They bring, you know, they bring a good show. But ultimately, it does come down to, you know, they were around in at that time when some of these guys, maybe in Eclipse, weren't even born yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's good to see that. I embrace the new, because I do see a lot of stuff on Facebook where people are like ripping those new bands apart. It's like, how can you do that? I mean, don't you want to like keep this going? Because eventually, if you just follow the ones we grew up on, they're going to die out. I hate to say that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So. Yeah, we do a monthly new releases show just
because
of that. And I like to call the people that are stuck in 89 lazy listeners, because I think there's good music coming out all the time. I mean,
there is.
I'm never looking for something to replace my favorite album or my favorite this or that, but I'm looking to add to the menu. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't add different things to a playlist that are going to accompany, you know, a classic that you've always loved.
Exactly. That's always been my attitude about that. And I stick with it. I mean, I'm very passionate, you know, about that thought, which is why,
right,
you know, I got into bands like Ghost, or I got into Eclipse, and I got into some of the, you know, like even like the heavier ones that were more prominent in the 2000s, like Trivium and Bullet for My Valentine. I mean, right. I saw both of those bands live, and they put on a great show.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're a little bit more like a more melodic and slick version of like Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
You know, less thrashy, but, you know, more flashy. I mean, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But they still, they really did have like a nice heavy edge to them, but they retained that, you know, melodic, memorable, you know, sound like that. What was that song from Trivium? Dying in Your Arms or whatever.
Right. Good
tune. Great tune. Still to this day, it's you know, if you just start, you know, building, like you said, your menu started with, you know, The Trooper, right, and Ace is High, and maybe, you know, I don't know, Love Bites or Turbo Lover or something like that. Your menu started there, and it just kept expanding. I mean, you'd see, you know, Master of Puppets on there, and you might see, you know, Rising Force from Yngwie, or you'd see Pull Me Under from Dream Theater. And eventually, as time goes on, you'd see, you know, what's the Tears Don't Fall from Bullet From My Valentine, and so on. You get all these great songs that it's okay to say, hey, I put this tune on, it's from 1982. And hey, I put this song on, it's from 2008 or whatever. You know, it's, I love that. I mean, I love that evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Cool.
Yeah. Xander, it's been a blast talking to you again.
Same here. Pleasure.
Hopefully it doesn't take another 13 years to years for us to hook up again.
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah. So around the time the album is out, you know, hit me up again and hopefully we can talk about the full album.
Definitely. And you'll get a copy.
Awesome. I appreciate your time, sir.
All right. Thank you, Victor. It's been great talking to you.
All right. See you.
All right. Have a good one.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcasting platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.